What's up, Brainiacs? Hope you're enjoying the podcast. Just a programming note that every Monday at 9 Central, you can join me, Andrew Cieslak, and Josh Custodio for Monday Night Program. Come hang out with us as we continue to build the WBCW universe using Fire Pro Wrestling Promoter Mode. Who should we sign? What matches should we book? Join us for the only professional wrestling program on Monday nights. That's Monday Night Program on twitch.tv/wrestlingbrain.
Comics in the combat zone, comics in the combat zone. Usually we make you laugh, but now we're watching guys get stabbed with light tubes.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to Comics in the Combat Zone. This week, talking CZW Best of the Best, May 19th, 2001 in Sewell, New Jersey at the Soccer Champs Arena. We're back at the Soccer Champs Arena here, Ben.
It was good to be back. Good to be home.
Yes.
Home court. Yeah, I mean, I like the fire station, and I like Froggies. But yeah, no, it's good to be back at the classic venue, I guess, the home turf.
The one where they've explicitly been told not to use glass or any sort of, you know,
yeah, weapons. Yeah, true.
Which they wouldn't really need on this show. So
No gimmicks.
For those of you who do not know, Best of the Best is like a juniors tournament that CZW, it still does to this day. So the fact that this is the first annual one, I was actually really like sort of excited for it. Because I assume the first would have to be a success for them to continue doing it like 23 years later or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. I think definitely this show's in the pantheon of like defining moments for CZW.
Yeah, and I will say, I was not excited about the 3 hour and 20 minute runtime that we had. We just stared down the barrel of.
Oh yeah, no, I was when I saw that, I was like, I want to stare down the barrel of something else.
I was hoping it was one of those shows. Remember when we just get random ones where the last like 30 minutes was just a blue screen without an explanation?
Yeah, or like just 2 hours of promos. But yeah. Like, I mean, we'll get into it. But I was. It was basically the inverse of that, I'd say.
Well, we did start with a shitload of promos. So we open, as we normally do now, with John House and Eric Gargiulo. Two guys I just like at this point. I really like the commentators. John House specifically is just a funny character.
They're your boys now. You're a big fan. You endorse everything they say, don't you? You think that everything they say is perfect.
No, sometimes John House will really tread the line.
Yeah, for sure.
Shit.
Although this episode, they weren't too bad. There was some funny stuff, but yeah, they were okay this one.
Yeah, so they're hyping the tournament. They're making their picks for the night. You can tell this entire show is just about this tournament. Zandig is just, it's his brainchild, and they are pumping it. Then we get a cut. Once again, we're outside the arena with the dude, just like last week. He's pacing around. He's waiting for the Briscoes. They finally show up, and he apologizes for the tough love last week, which, if you remember, is when he got Nick Gage and Nate Hatred to intimidate the Briscoes' parents in the crowd.
Classic tough love tactic, threaten to beat up, but like Nick Gage, getting Nick Gage to beat up the parents.
Yeah, it was very funny.
Yeah.
And then tonight, one of you guys is going to win the tournament. I don't care which one. And your parents, for your parents' sake, you better hope one of you wins the tournament. So again, threatening the parents. It's like, why would you work for this guy?
Yeah, no, that is very true. Yeah, I don't know what. Maybe they're in a ironclad contract, and even the parents are like, well, you signed it, bro.
That's life. It's a life lesson.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. If we've got to get beat up to teach you that, it'll be worth it.
So then we cut, and Ruckus rolls up on Zabar, who's just like, he's like writing on a clipboard in the back, and Ruckus is angry that he's not in the tournament. So apparently Zabar, just like, because he works for Zandig, just books this whole thing. And then what's his name? Danny Rose shows up, and he's angry that his partner Adam Flash isn't in it. So remember Adam Flash from last week? Apparently teams with Danny Rose, which sort of makes sense because I guess they look similar. Danny Rose quickly becoming an annoying figure in CZW.
Yeah, especially when his counterpart, who makes him bearable, Adam Flash, is not in it. I ended up really liking Adam Flash, so I was a bit disappointed about that.
Then we get a cut. Nick Burke promo, alone to the camera, short and sweet. Another cut, a masked Japanese guy we just don't know the name of, cuts a promo in Japanese and then very broken English. At this point, they are just fucking hitting us with promos. Like,
yeah.
Another cut, we're back with Eric Gargiulo. Sorry, I almost died there. Eric Gargiulo with Trent Acid and Zabar, when again, Danny Rose forces himself into the picture and pushes Eric Gargiulo away, saying, if I'm not in the tournament, I'm going to be the backstage interviewer. This is where I just started hating this guy. Acid cuts a promo on this guy I've never heard of, Juventud Guerrera, who's going to be in the thing tonight, which I popped at. Like, Juventud Guerrera is a big deal in 2001.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You have heard of Juventud Guerrera?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. I thought
he had a long WCW run.
Yeah, because I recognize, is he related to Eddie?
No, it's Guerrero.
Oh,
Guerrero.
Okay.
Easy mistake.
Yeah, no, I'm not a racist.
He actually, Juventud Guerrera was fired from WCW a few months earlier for having a PCP-related incident in an airport. So,
PCP-related. It's very funny to imagine that it's not to do with taking it.
No, I mean, it was.
Yeah, I know, yeah, but just to be like PCP-related, it's like, oh, did he take? Like, no, something else.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. And yeah, so he's back on the indies now, and I'm happy to have him here in CZW. Then we cut, and we're in the back with Minoru Fujita, who's for some reason chopping vegetables. It's very strange.
This guy's sick.
And he also cuts a random promo in Japanese, the only word I could understand being CZW. Then another cut, we're back outside with Danny Rose, who's looking for the SAT. And then John House appears with him, sympathizing with him that he's not in the tournament. And then the camera just pans over, and the SAT are on John House's pickup truck trying to steal it.
Yeah, there's some weird jokes there about SAT. I mean, the SATs in England, we have an exam where they're like, oh, I never took that. It's like, oh, okay. Nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that's what it was.
Yeah, well, in England, there's like SAT, so I'm pretty sure they mention like it's exams or something. They make some shit jokes, but yeah, then they're just like, whoa, are they on your truck? And then they are on his truck.
Trying to steal it.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to take his truck.
So this was, of course, probably just a bit of racial humor here by CZW. And then John House is trying to talk to them, and they just ignore him and are speaking Spanish to Danny Rose. Danny tries to interview them, and then they leave. It's a very weird segment. Am I recording there, by the way? Just because. Yeah. Okay, cool. I just bumped the thing. Cut this. And then another cut, and finally we are in the arena after, I want to say, 8 segments. Like, this,
yeah,
was,
a long,
this
a lo-
was about
a long
20
time.
Minutes of shit, like just random shit.
Yeah, I was worried that like that was gonna set the tone for the show, but thankfully it seemed like they were front loading that.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. And then we get in the arena with the announcer entering the ring, and he's followed by Brian Logan carrying a giant trophy that, like, literally it's just a bit taller than the top rope. And I'm like, man, that's pretty cool. He's ending shelled out for this big ass trophy.
Yeah, although I mean, it is a big trophy, yeah, but it also, like, looks like a generic trophy. Like, it could be for a karate competition or something from, like, a weird generic one that they've just put on there. But, hey, it's a big trophy. They've gone whole heart. They've gone maximalist with the size.
I was so sure this thing was getting destroyed on this show.
Yeah, I was as well.
As soon as I saw it, I'm like, someone is getting hit with
this
trophy.
That's what I mean by it. I was like, this comically large. It's almost comically large trophy to give out at a wrestling tournament. But, like, Fair play.
And you know whoever wins it isn't keeping it. Like, they have to give it back next year for best.
Yeah, 100%. Probably the next day. Like, no, this is a rental. It's like a tuxedo.
Yeah, so the announcer welcomes us to the first ever Best of the Best and then welcomes every single participant in the ring, all coming out wearing an orange Best of the Best t-shirt. This is just directly what Japan does with the Super Juniors tournament. It's so funny how... I love just how inspired by Japan Zandig is.
Yeah.
He just loves it. He thinks it's the best wrestling. And then, speak of the devil, Zandig enters alongside Trent holding an active weed whacker, yelling CZ fucking W. I was like, is he just going to weed whack someone for no reason here?
It's just
a prop.
It's like where the planes fly over to start like a military thing. Zandig marches over with a weed whacker.
We got a lot of CZ fucking W's here from Zandig.
Yeah, and... I mean, I imagine this show, there probably was a lot on the line with this show. I don't know. Like obviously, he's saying it's a tournament that's still going. And yeah, he was probably like quite new, I get, like, to bring over and to do it. Thing. It probably was like a Hail Mary, potentially, of just like, yeah, we're putting on this massive show.
You can tell he was very excited about it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And so he's saying, tonight's all about these boys, the best juniors in the world. The fans are fired up, and they start chanting for Nick Mondo specifically, out of all the guys in the ring, which I thought was actually pretty cool. And then Zandig names every wrestler individually in the ring just for cheers, and I'm like, man, this is a three-hour show. We are going long here. And then they announce that Juventud's plane arrived an hour ago, and he's actually still on the way to the building, which would play out later. Then they all pose at the entrance ramp for a photo, and Zandig says, maybe some of the fucking wrestling magazines will give us the respect we deserve now. before the tournament even starts, he's already demanding respect.
Yeah, he's starting beef.
Yeah. So then we cut, and finally, the first match, it feels like it's been forever. The first match begins, and we get out first is Japanese wrestler Winger, who's wearing a mask. I've never heard of this guy before, but apparently he's a former deathmatch wrestler.
Okay.
And they keep talking about how he beat Trent Acid in Japan in, like, last July.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so apparently that was a legendary match that we have missed.
Yeah, that, I mean, I'd like to watch that match. I like, you know, I like what I see of Winger, so.
Yeah, and then out second is simply known as Red from the SAT. Of course, the amazing Red. Notified here as a big fan favorite from the commentators. And he is. The fans love Red, like, already. And then finally, the odds-on favorite, the franchise player Rick fucking Blade.
They love that phrase. They say it so much.
The franchise, like,
franchise player.
Yeah, exactly.
It's franchise player Rick Blade.
And they also announced that Shorty is currently at home expecting child, which I thought was sort of sweet because I assume she was just not coming out with him because they'd broken up or something.
Yeah, no, but I mean, they don't mention the dad, so maybe it was Mondo. Maybe it was Sick Nick Mondo.
So how these matches work, by the way, is it's three ways, but whoever gets pinned is eliminated, and then the two other guys go on to face each other in a singles in the next match, which I thought was sort of interesting. I didn't really mind that.
Yeah, I've not... Yeah, it was an interesting, like, to follow it as well. I mean, CZW bloody loves its weird stipulations, so it was par for the course.
Yeah, absolutely.
As long as no one was like, and also now you have to kill yourself, like when Zandig, like, last time was like, oh, yeah. Turns out the stipulation was you have to leave the company.
Yeah. The fans are electric here to start, by the way. I will say, I do think CZW does get the stigma of, like, moronic fans, which is well-deserved. I mean, they are rednecks or whatever, but they do love good wrestling, and they were very excited about this tournament from the offset.
As CZW's grown, so has, like, the quality of the fans, I guess. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, they're still wrestling fans, for better and for worse, but they've definitely, like, I think, yeah, but, like, respect it a lot more and aren't as quick to just start fucking... Like, we've watched shows where they've just been hammered and just been chanting immediately that this is dog shit and stuff like that, and it does just kind of put a dampener on it all. So
yeah, they've started matches by chanting boring.
Yeah, like, it's just okay. Yeah.
So they all take turns hitting impressive moves on one another, aside from Rick Blade, who botches his right away. And then it turns into a three-way exchange of pinfalls. And again, Blade just botches a pinfall attempt here. It's like, man, not a great start for Rick Blade. And the other two are just so much smoother as well. So it sort of highlights how unsmooth Rick Blade is.
Yeah.
Red springboard dropkicks Blade, knocking him outside. Winger then does the same move to Red, knocking him outside, and then does a senton dive onto both men. I'm really liking Winger right out the gate here. It's like, I don't know, just a Japanese luchador, and he just looked really cool.
Yeah.
In the ring, Blade reverses Winger with a reverse DDT, then catches Red out of the air and hits a huge facebuster on him. Red is so great because not only is his offense great, but it's so easy to just toss him around and,
yeah,
like, hit huge moves on him.
Yeah. Very, very Rey Mysterio, I'd say.
Totally, yeah. Yeah. Red reverses an Irish Whip and Enziguri's Blade into Winger's Brainbuster, which was a cool spot, followed by the standing Red Star Press, they call it, from Red for two. The fans are just fucking loving Red here. He really is the fan favorite. He's on the top rope, but Rick Blade just shoves him off over the post onto Winger on the outside and then does an insane corkscrew to both guys. Huge Rick Blade chant. And then Winger is getting up, he says, "Welcome to America, motherfucker," and kicks him in the head.
Nice.
Nice. He welcomed him.
Yeah.
And then Blade hits a suplex combo on Winger. Red breaks it up. So Blade hits this disgusting hammerlock sit-out powerbomb on Red. It's like a snap powerbomb. He just whips him to the mat as hard as he can.
It does look brutal.
Mm-hmm. Blade goes to moonsault, but Winger climbs and then hits a released German on him, followed by a 450 from Red, and then followed by a cannonball sent on by Winger. Both pin Rick Blade at 6 minutes and 41 seconds, and the commentators are shocked. The odds-on favorite, the franchise player,
eliminated. They are just like, I mean, because they both pin him.
Yes.
And then they're like, oh, what happens now? So I guess, like, they both, yeah, because they both have a match or whatever. But it is weird that they both go into pin him, because it's like he wouldn't have been knocked out if Rick Blade got pinned. They would have just had a singles match, right?
Well, no, but that's why.
Yeah.
Like, it makes more sense that they'd both pin someone than in later matches we'll see them break up pins.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense
at all. Yeah.
So, yeah, they Winger and Red move on to face each other. Rick Blade is out very early. And then he gets on the mic and puts over Winger as a guy who was told his career would end but then proved them all wrong. So I assume that means he had like an insane injury or something.
It's good that he's come back to wrestle in the safest wrestling company you can, CZW.
In front of 200 people.
Yeah.
And then he puts over Red as simply unbelievable. So Rick Blade humble in defeat here as we cut. The next match, cue the Papa Roach as actual fan favorite Sick Nick Mondo enters the ring. He grabs the microphone and just immediately admonishes the crowd for chanting his name. And he calls them sheep, but then says, "But I am not your shepherd."
It's like, nice.
That's a badass line.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Pretty new metal.
And then both Briscoes enter the ring together with the Do, and he's like instructing them to take out Mondo. So it is Jay Briscoe versus Mark Briscoe versus Nick Mondo here, which I thought was sort of cool, having the Briscoes in the same match.
Bit weird. I don't know why they'd do that, though. Like, I mean, obviously wrestling, whatever, but if you know, you wouldn't do that. That's so stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, when they finally changed their singlets up a bit, so once you remember who's who, it is easy to tell, which was nice, actually, because before that, they were wearing the exact same one, and they look so similar.
Yeah.
They're not twin brothers. I believe Mark's a bit
younger. I don't think they're twins.
But they look like twins.
Yeah. Especially at this point where they're like both skinheads.
Children.
Children skinheads just wearing the same, like, gym gear.
Yeah, they would grow up to have very different looks, sort of like how the Bellas were, like, one of the Bellas was, like, thin and vegetarian, and the other one got big fake tits and, like, just tanned and ridiculous looking.
It'd be great if the Briscoes went in that direction as well, had gone in that direction as well.
Mark Briscoe with big fake tits.
Yeah, that'd rule.
So Mark and Nick start reverse off as Jay just stands back and watches it. He gets involved to help Mark break up a pinfall for two. And then Jay just turns and gives Mark a big hurricane rana. So right away, the Do is pissed that the Briscoes are just, like, wrestling each other.
I mean, you would be.
It doesn't just really make sense.
Yeah, kill Nick Mondo. Literally just kill Nick Mondo and then work it out. Yeah.
Mondo's hung up on the top as the Briscoes hit a super double neck breaker on him. And then Jay goes to pin him, but Mark breaks it up. Breaks up the pinfall on Mondo. It's like, does he just want the pride of having the pinfall here?
Yeah, man, I presume some of them don't understand the stipulation or know what's going on.
He's like, no, we have to have a good match here, bro.
Yeah, like, yeah, we need to. Our mom's come all the way from the other street.
So Mondo goes to hurricane run to Jay, but Mark drop kicks him to the face, allowing Jay to wheelbarrow him into a pinfall attempt. And then again, Mark breaks the pinfall. Mark attempts a tornado DDT, but Mondo counters with a sit-out bomb for two, then turns into the top rope wheel kick from Jay. So as soon as Mondo gets a move on one, he just immediately turns into another move from the other guy. The Briscoes in the ring start wrestling. Jay powerbomb pins, but Mondo breaks it up with a leg drop. Again, no sense at all here. Mondo grabs two chairs, and then this is a hilarious spot. Like, Mondo enters the ring with two chairs as the Briscoes each get to the top rope. And basically, Mondo has to hold the chairs up to his own head, and they both they both drop kick each chair into his head.
Yeah, it's
it looks sort of cool, but it makes no sense at all. Like, why would he hold them like that? This is followed by a double spine buster, then a double moonsault by the Briscoes for a two count. They build a chair table, and then for some reason, they just break it and just lay the chairs down. Then they lay Mondo on top of them. They go for double top rope leg drops, but Mondo moves, so both guys just land on these chairs, like, tailbone first. Mondo then smokes Mark in the head with a chair, face busters Jay. He counters Mark and hits what he will be known as the assault driver. Basically, like, he has him in an electric chair position and just flips them forward, landing them on their shoulders. It's a really cool move. I really like it. Mondo sets a table up outside. He pulls both Briscoes out, laying them both on the table with a chair on top. He goes to dive, but Jay runs in and blocks Mondo. Mondo tries to suplex him onto the table, but Mark is now standing on the table. So Mondo runs at Jay, who backbodies him onto a sit-out powerbomb from Mark through this table. This is, like, it's a tough spot to imagine, but it looked fucking incredible.
Yeah, they're definitely a cut above for sure.
And again, Mondo just going out of his way to take as much damage as possible in a match. Mondo then is thrown into the ring and eats a double power bomb from both brothers to take the pin at 9 minutes and 50 seconds. Another fun match. I mean,
very fun. Yeah, it's been very consistent so far.
Two crackers in a row.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was three crackers in that match.
Well, yeah, sorry, you know what I mean.
So
now the Briscoes advance to face one another. And Mondo snaps and attacks both after the match when Justice Payne out of nowhere rushes the ring to attack him. Security and referees break this up and carry Mondo to the back. Justice Payne grabs a mic and invites Mondo to join the ultra-violent six-man tag tonight. And I'm like, is this a handicap? Like, I don't know what to expect from this match. So then we cut and we get Minoru Fujita, who is like one of my favorite guys. He's just chocked full of charisma.
He's a good guy. He's very fun to watch. He's very exciting to watch. And yeah, he's very watchable.
Mm-hmm. And then out next from the SAT, Jose Maximo, which the Maximos are another brother team that are tough to tell apart. So I was sort of glad they'd actually separated them and didn't just put them in the same match like the Briscoes. Yeah. And then finally, former CCW champion Nick Berg, which is something they'll say like four times in this match.
Yeah, former franchise player champion.
He held it for 2 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's good. It still counts, bro.
So they have a triple lockup to start, and it leads to double arm drags from Burke into a triple dropkick stalemate. The fans are cheering for this as well. Jose is dumped to the outside, and Burke dives onto him. Fujita dives onto both, and then a big Asai moonsault from Jose onto both. You always got to get your triple just dives here. They take turns in singles with one on the outside until Jose is the one inside. Pulled out by both guys, eats a double super kick from both guys. Fujita hits this unique DDT on Burke in the ring, then slams Jose on top of Burke, lifts Jose back up for a brainbuster. Then Burke hits the Burkulator on Fujita onto Jose for the win at 3 minutes and 15 seconds.
The Burkulator.
Yeah. Don't you like the name of that? It's essentially a facebuster for those of you who don't remember the names of these moves.
Yeah, but it just sounds like a gun from Rick and Morty or something. The Burkulator. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like from one of those video games, like a gun that turns people into chickens. Or
yeah,
something.
Just something goofy. Yeah, the Burkulator. I don't know. It's just because Burke's an insult, so calling something the Burkulator.
Well, it's almost like Edge has a ton of those dumb ones too. Yeah, it's like the education.
Education. Okay. Yeah. It's better than Burkulator.
Yeah, I guess so. So Fujita and Burke continue to brawl after this match until once again security gets in between. Security's on their game here tonight.
Finally, Jesus, it's been 2 years. And finally, security are like, yeah, we should break this up.
And you knew there were going to be some quick matches in this because I think the winner has to wrestle like 4 or 5 times by the end of the night. So like,
no, yeah, I think the show goes at a pattern. And like I said, I think they front load all the promo stuff, which is good. Because, I mean, there's a bit of hoo-ha in a little bit. And obviously the stuff at Mondo, but they move at a very quick pace. Mm-hmm. Maybe because also the building probably closes.
Yes. So we cut, and Trent Acid is out first here, accompanied by Zabar. And then cue the same SAT music again as Joel Maximo is out second. The leader of the Spanish announce team, apparently, which is what SAT stands for. If you didn't
know. Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did reveal that.
Then at this point, the announcer declares, Juventud's flight has been delayed, so Ruckus will take his place, even though he's clearly not a junior heavyweight. And they've also, like... When Justice Payne was out earlier, they made a point of saying that he wanted to enter the tournament, but he couldn't lose enough weight, so wasn't allowed to. And then the next segment, they bring out Ruckus.
Hey, he's lost. They make a big example of saying he's lost 10 pounds.
He's just clearly like...
And then the other commentator, I think House John the House Hitman or whatever, is just like, yeah, he's still fat, though. And yeah, you're like, oh, wow. Yeah. Wow, well, yeah, come on, he's trying, bro.
They say he's down 35 pounds between the last two shows, so... Good for him.
Yeah, that's amazing.
We get Trent Acid versus Joel Maximo versus Ruckus. The fans are just so into Ruckus here, and they seem fine with the replacement. Like,
to be fair, he doesn't move like he's a heavyweight. He don't move like he moves like he's a junior. That's for sure.
He's got the grace.
Yeah.
Of a junior heavyweight.
Yeah, for sure.
Acid attempts attack from behind when Ruckus isn't looking, but Ruckus throws him out and then throws Joel on the apron. Acid drop kick, like, so Acid's already outside and then Joel's on the apron, and Acid just drop kicks Joel's knee like from the floor, which is pretty cool. And then Ruckus hits the handspring moonsault to the outside, known as the badass. Ruckus is in the ring with Joel. Joel counters and hits an avalanche buster, but then misses a frog splash right after on Ruckus. He whips Irish whips Ruckus, and Acid intercepts it with a missile dropkick. That was really good timing. Joel lifts Acid, almost losing him, and then hits a cradle driver for two. But then Ruckus makes the save for Trent Acid for some reason. This is one of those dangerous ones where he's like legitimately almost loses it and then decides to hit the move anyway.
Yeah.
And it's like a dangerous one on your neck. And I'm like, I maybe wouldn't have done that, but he didn't want to hear the dreaded "you fucked up" chant.
Yeah.
Ruckus hits a reverse DDT facebuster, which the commentators tell us he calls the Parker in honor of his
Peter.
Trainer.
Oh, right.
Yeah, something Parker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then finally, Joel cuts off a clothesline, hits a moonsault, but Acid saves, breaking up the count. It's like the heel saves Ruckus from getting pinned here. Again, it's just like, what?
Yeah, it doesn't make it really doesn't make any sense.
I know we're going to say that a few times, but I was just like, it almost takes you out of the match in a way because it's just so dumb.
You would just both, yeah, you would just team up on one of them. It especially makes putting the Briscoes in the same even more stupid. But
yeah,
I guess it's very strange.
Yeah, so Acid hits an Alabama slam on Ruckus, and then Joel throws Acid into the corner. When Ruckus is just back up, hits a triple handspring elbow onto Joel, and then he runs to the other side of the ring and hits a tornado DDT on Acid. The fans are going crazy for Ruckus here. And then another handspring elbow to Joel, but then he turns around into a Yakuza kick from Trent Acid. All three men are down here. As Ruckus climbs to the top, Trent slingshots Joel, hanging Ruckus on top, and sets Ruckus up for an Acid bomb. But once again, Joel breaks up the pinfall, saving Ruckus here. Joel goes for a wheelbarrow bulldog on Trent, but then Trent just sits out and gets the clean pin here on Joel, who could have just let Ruckus get pinned a second ago. Instead,
it is weird. It is very strange.
So instead, he's out.
It seems like we're missing something, but we're not, like...
No.
Even if it was elimination, even if it wasn't, you go the singles match and it was elimination, you would just let the other person thingy. Like, there's not a winner.
Mm-hmm.
You don't lose if you do this.
It would be like if in an elimination chamber match. You're like, no, don't get him out yet.
Yeah, like, it's... And, like, the problem is, as well, there's no, like, story within it, in the matches or whatever, to, like, justify being like, I'm breaking up because I want to batter him some more.
Yeah.
It is just a case of, like, these are people they've never met, like, in the matches, and they're like, no, I want to be the one to pin him.
Trent Acid, the cowardly heel, is, like, saving Ruckus.
Yeah, it's really strange.
Yeah. So we do get our cut here. All three men leave without incident. And it's two of the SAT just out in the first round, so only Red moves on. Sorry. With the first round behind us, we get a random six-man tag here. So you do get your Adam Flash coming out with Danny Rose and then, of course, Jeff Rocker. And they enter to Rocker's music. And it's so weird because, like, I mean, Danny Rose and Rocker were already a weird-looking team, but Flash and Rose have the exact same aesthetic, and Jeff Rocker is still just a big juice monster and, like, baby blue tights.
Yeah, I wanted Flash in the tournament for sure. Like, I don't know, like, it would have been...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, if Genie have you? I did miss that part, so I didn't know he would have been able to go in if
Ruckus was in.
Yeah, yeah. So he's, you know,
Ruckus being in it means anyone in the company.
Jeff Rocker
could
have been in it. Yeah, Rockin' Rebel making his return.
Oh yeah, I'm so glad. So glad he's not.
Yeah, yeah. It was. This was odd. Like, I don't know, especially with the momentum of the show going so well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and you know, this is a bit. There's a bit of bullshit as well. It does kind of slow the show down.
Yeah.
Because it's like Max kind of rocks up and stuff.
Yeah, he rocks out with John Dahmer and Eddie Valentine, otherwise known as VD. And then he cuts this totally illegible promo. Remember when they had a good in-ring microphone? Like, what happened to that?
It was at Froggy's, and Froggy's were like, you're not taking it with you. This belongs to us. But yeah, like, this is like the one aspect they still can't nail. And also, it doesn't help that Max has the worst voice for speaking into a microphone.
Yeah, he's terrible. He just blows it out.
Yeah, yeah. It's his thingy. But yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know, the show was going so well and was like very lean and thingy. It does feel a bit disappointing to like now have to deal with just watching this bullshit.
Yeah, and then obviously, like, I think we would later find out they weren't lying about Juventud Guerrero, like, and they weren't trying to give a bait and switch.
Mm.
Like, he legitimately was just late to this show. So they bring out Ruckus to team with Valentine and Dahmer here, which was clearly, like, the original match he was booked into, and they just needed a body for that last match.
Yeah. I mean, fair play, man.
Yeah. Two matches in a row.
Yeah, it's insane.
So we get Valentine and Rocker to begin, and they have this, like, slow-motion reversal. It was just after the last four matches we saw that was all just smooth and fast. Watching these two guys.
Yeah, it's like, It's like in a basketball match at the halftime show where you're like, come on down and like see if you can slam dunk or whatever. And you're just like watching a baby try it. Because Rocket, yeah, it's very slow. And I was just like, oh man, why have they done this?
Yeah, it leads to a suplex combo from Rocker. And then he locks in a sharpshooter of all moves, which the commentary says he calls the Rocker Locker.
The Rocker. Yeah.
And then Ruckus makes the save, which actually makes sense that he made the save.
Yeah. I guess that this is when how he's operating now.
Yeah. Eddie Valentine hits two neck breakers and a tornado DDT, tags in Dahmer, and then they hit this like lame choreographed double team move. It was just like a drop toe hold into a drop kick. But again, they're just so slow and bad compared to what we were just watching for the last hour. They start triple teaming Rocker. We get the handspring elbow into a bomb strike into a German suplex, which all look good. Dahmer hits his big spine buster into the what's up leg drop, but finally Danny Rose makes the save. So it's weird, like Rocker goes to tag and then Rose just refuses to tag him. So they are doing this thing where Flash and Rose just don't respect Jeff Rocker and are basically refusing to like partake in the match.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
Valid.
And the commentators are saying like that is part of the story. Like Jeff Rocker is a loser that nobody likes in the back.
That is really funny. Like that is yeah. That I do get that energy from him.
Yeah,
like he thinks he's a hard man. Well, no, I would imagine like he's juiced up and just tries to be everyone's friend, yeah. And it just falls flat completely. And he's just like a bit of a geek.
Yeah, and even like bad wrestlers are like, well, you can't wrestle. And it's yeah. Like, well, none of you can wrestle.
Yeah.
Rocker finally hits a belly to belly for two on Dahmer, then lifts Dahmer for the TKO, or as he calls it, the Rocker Dropper, for two.
Oh my God.
So much stuff rhymes with Rocker here.
Yeah.
Finally, Rocker forces tag to Danny Rose. He just like slaps him on the chest to get him in the ring. And then Danny comes in like a house of fire, hits a high knee, then a cocky pin. He tags Flash in, and both guys hit a double choke slam for two. And then this match just becomes Flash and Rose, like, double-teaming guys for the entire time, just making quick tags to one another, to the point where Rocker's, like, now upset he's not being allowed in the match.
Yeah.
So the story of this is really weird. And then finally, Rocker tags himself in, and Ruckus just comes in and crushes him with a chair shot as Flash just dives onto the other four guys outside of the ring. Ruckus climbs to the top of the bird nest as now all the rest of the guys are outside. You know the bird nest thing that we saw Lobo get thrown off of?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like pretty high up.
Yeah, very high.
Especially for a guy like Ruckus. And then he hits a gigantic moonsault onto this entire pile of people. That is a big man to be coming
down.
Yeah,
that
like
is. I don't care
heads.
If he's lost 35 pounds. That's still a weight and a half.
Mm-hmm. Rose is then aiming a chair as Eddie is like giving his head. It's weird. Like Eddie was like, he's doing that wrestler thing where he's just bracing for a headshot.
Yeah.
And then Rose is almost like, I don't want to hit this guy in the head. And he shoves his head down and hits him in the back with the chair. So nice guy move by him, I guess. Flash and Rose double team facebuster Ruckus in the ring, and then Ruckus hits Rocker hits an exploder on him. He holds Ruckus for a concerto, and you know what's happening here. Ruckus gets out of the way. Rose and Flash, they smoke Rocker with the chairs, and then they argue with what just happened as Ruckus just hits this flawless 450 splash on Rocker, just squashing him, and they get the clean win at 12 minutes and 49 seconds. This match, it didn't even need to be on the card, and then it didn't need to be 12 minutes.
No.
I was just like, what?
No, absolutely not.
What was this?
Yeah, the worst match of the night, and like not, I don't know, like not bad, I guess, but yeah, just considering what we'd been watching, like, I understand it, I guess, actually, like these guys, some of the guys needed a rest, I suppose, to reset, like they're going to go again, but just a shame that it was shit.
Yeah. The babyfaces celebrate and leave as the heels are arguing, and then Rocker leaves them, the two other guys, behind. And the commentary are mentioning all of Rocker's failed ventures, and then they say, including the guy we aren't allowed to mention on commentary. So something definitely happened with Rock and Rebel. Like,
yeah,
they call him
sure.
The guy that they're not even, he's like persona non grata in the company.
Yeah, that's, yeah, they Chris Benoit him.
Yes, exactly. Which he probably did something really fucked up.
Yeah. Considering what he did in the show, and they're all like, yeah, he's great. Yeah, crazy.
So then we cut, and out first in round two, wearing a new mask was Winger, which I thought was cool. And then his opponent, everyone's favorite, Red. And I'm like, this match should rule. Like,
yeah,
Winger versus
yeah.
Red, I'm just excited for. They start with a fast reverse off, of course, leads to what they call a satellite DDT from Red, where he just flips around him like three times before just planting him. He kicks Winger outside and hits his insane corkscrew. Like, I couldn't even count how many times Red flipped in the air, like 4 or 5 full rotations.
Yeah, insane.
In the ring, they have another reverse off where they keep missing flips. It ends with a twisting suplex from Ringer, followed by a twisting back suplex. Winger then misses a tumbleweed off the top rope as both are down. It allows Red to hit the sliced bread, which the fans, I don't know if this was like a move, regular move at this point, and the fans fucking lose it for it. And then they followed by the Red Star Press, but then misses a Phoenix Splash right after. And the Phoenix Splash is such a tough one to miss because you build so much momentum doing like a 180 into a 450, and then he just crashes into the fucking mat. So Winger gets him up, hits a pump handle Falcon Arrow, goes to the top, hits his Cannonball Senton we saw him just use in the last match, and gets the quick win here at 4 minutes and 32 seconds. This was short and sweet.
Yeah, for sure.
I was sad to see Red go so early, but...
I'm sure he'll be back.
Yeah.
I'm sure Red will be back.
And Winger leaves right away, just giving time for the fans to give a standing ovation to Red.
Yeah.
Like, they clearly are building him, yeah, for something. And then we cut, and Mark Briscoe enters first for the next one. The music stops, and then they start playing the exact same music as Jay Briscoe.
He has got his own, like, walking music or whatever.
I thought they would just, like, keep the music going or enter
yeah,
together.
No. He's got to have his own introduction. Come on.
Mm-hmm. The Dew is out with his own microphone. He's like, impossible to understand, but I think he's saying, we're not doing this match, and just tries to declare Jay the winner. And then Hartog steps in, who we haven't seen in a while in a few shows. He's taking a backseat.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, after his heroics. After a couple of weeks of heroics.
And he doesn't accept this. He bans the Dew from ringside. So we get Jay Briscoe versus Mark Briscoe. And I didn't know what to expect from this match, and then it began. They're feeling each other out with basic grapples and reversals, exchanging of submissions as well. It's really starting, like, slow and methodical, but still, like, good, you know. Finally, Mark dumps Jay out, teases a dive, but does a backflip landing in the ring. The pace quickens with a reverse off, ends with a Mark leg lariat, and then another exchange sees both guys hitting Hurricane Ranas. The fans are super into this at this point. They start their classic Fuck the Hardys chant, which I think is always funny. Mark hits a body slam, springboard knee drop. He's in full control. Jay stops him short and then hits a disgusting tiger driver onto Mark. Jay gets him in a tombstone and then hits a jumping tombstone for good measure. Then sets a huge splash. Like, he's like, goes to the top rope where Mark is closer to him and says, no, fuck this, and goes to the other side of the ring and hits a gigantic splash. Like, I was like, there's no way he's going to hit this.
Yeah, they are proper brutes. It's very similar to Gage and Justice Payne, I guess, where I guess they're just willing to push each other as far as they can go.
Totally, yeah.
Because they're definitely doing a lot of, like, on the commentary, like, he's just killed his brother.
Well, and they have that chemistry of guys who have just trained together and come up together. Jace goes for the J-Driller, which we haven't actually seen him use in CZW yet. For those of you who don't know, it's a butterfly pile driver, which I remember the first time seeing this move and being like, Jesus Christ, that looks awesome. Mark counters, but Jay holds on and matrixes it and then gets up and just hits the J-Driller clean for 2. The crowd is going fucking crazy at this point. Mark is in the corner. He counters a brainbuster. Jay rolls over, and then Mark hits a flying Hurricane Runner off the apron onto the ground. Jay just splats on the floor outside. Jay is laid on the floor outside, and then Mark just hits a moonsault, like an acai moonsault, just flat on the floor.
Yeah.
At this point, the fans are just chanting CZW. People are fucking losing it. Like, I was losing it. I was like, this is fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's insane.
They get back in the ring. We get a gut buster for 2 from Mark right after. Then Mark puts Jay on top, hits a super Northern Light suplex for 2. The fans are giving this a standing ovation at this point. They are on their feet. They have this insane chop-off, which then ends with a cutthroat driver from Mark, which is essentially just a burning hammer. He drops Jay right on his head and neck here. That's a 2 count. Mark hits a powerbomb, misses a moonsault, allows Jay to hit this half-Nelson suplex. The fans are chanting Briscoes at this point, just for both guys. Mark tries his own, but then Jay hits another one for a huge near fall. Mark on top of the ring gets countered and hits a super J-Driller for the win, as I believe Jay Briscoe moves ahead here, sorry, at 14 minutes and 49 seconds. This was an incredible show stealer of a match. I later found out that this is actually a pretty legendary CZW match that people have, like, actually talked about.
Yeah, I think, like, when, you know, it's clear that this definitely was probably the match where people took note of the Briscoes.
Because,
like, yeah, when they've been in tag team matches, they've been decent, but, like, seeing what they can do, like in a like it was perfect really to have them go against each other because you know they were kind of no holds barred and like this is what we can do without all this bullshit interference and stuff. Warthog, mate. Unsung hero for banning the dude from ringside.
Well, and this was like nearly 15 minutes. I didn't feel that way at all.
No, it's insane pace, and they felt like proper wrestlers. Like,
yes.
Which is sometimes you can't say that for every wrestler in CZW.
Well, and a super J-driller, like, given what I just said, the move is like a butterfly pile driver off the top rope is so fucking dangerous. Like,
yeah, for sure.
The fact that they even went for it.
And, like, pulled it off, and it was, like, very, very few. It was, like, yeah, it was a great match.
The fans are standing chanting Briscoes as both men leave, and the fans just won't stop chanting Briscoes. So I don't know if I've ever seen this in wrestling. Like, they come back out almost like
an encore, yeah,
for an encore, just to suck in more cheers.
Yeah, just do more power bombs on each other. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was a great match, and I'm not surprised it's a legendary match. I mean, like I said, I do think this show as a whole was probably a defining. Mm-hmm. Defining moment for CZW.
Yeah, and the Briscoes probably in particular. I imagine just tape traders are like, you got to see this fucking Briscoes match.
Yeah. And the dude had done well to make themselves manager.
Yeah, well, and to fuck off and not like, ruin it. Powder at someone or whatever. Out comes next is Minoru Fujita, and he's still looking angry. And then Nick Burke is out next, and he also looks angry as Fujita's getting held back by the ref. It's so weird, they just decided to brawl, and it's sort of just like, these guys hate each other now, but they don't really have any reason to, other than they're facing each other in a tournament. They go face-to-face with an intense stare down and then start shoving each other, and then they just start exchanging arm drags, which I love the idea that, like, you're ready to fuck a guy up and, like, I'm going to hit him with an arm drag. You'd think it would just be punches or whatever.
Yeah.
That it builds to a Fujita leg lariat, and then a short drop kick to Burke's face. He goes for another, but then Burke drop toe holds him into an Oriental Scorpion submission. I like the name of that one, so I made sure to write it down here.
Do you think it's still called that?
I don't know.
No, the Oriental Scorpion, yeah. I don't know about that, but yeah, no, interesting.
Yeah. Burke gets up, counters a Irish whip, and hits a reverse Samoan drop. So if you can imagine that, like, face first this guy into the mat. Then he picks him up for another face buster. He's just working over the face here at this point. And then he goes for another move, but Fujita gets an arm bar. Burke escapes and then gets a leg lock of his own. Fujita catches a kick, then throws it into a cross arm breaker. So he's just working his arm here heavily at this point. And again, Burke goes for a clothesline, and Fujita just catches him with another arm bar. Burke fights back. He hits big punches, a clothesline, a big power bomb, but then he's quickly countered into an arm bar. You guessed it. This is like five moves in a row where Fujita just cancels with his arm bar. And then Burke calls for his finisher. He's countered into a dragon suplex with a bridge by Fujita for the flash pin at 7 minutes and 13 seconds. So I guess you can sort of theorize that his arm was so weakened that the holding him for the dragon suplex, maybe that's what made the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought this was sort of weird here. I like Fujita a lot, but I just did think they were going to use this as a way to platform Nick Burke a bit and give him the big win. So I was sort of surprised to see him just lose clean here. And then both guys shake hands, and also because they were like fucking his arm up so much, I thought the story of the next match was going to be Burke's going in like injured with this hurt arm, and he even walks to the back like selling his arm.
Yeah,
but it doesn't really matter because
I mean
he's done for the night.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know. Like Burke does seem to be a bit of a not a jobber, but like very much mid card like. Like, decent enough. Like, a match against him is not going to be a squash, but also the other person's probably going to be winning.
Yeah, and well, like, how could you call a former CZW champion a jobber?
I mean, quite easily.
Yeah. Out next is Trent Acid with Zabar. And he comes to the ring, and he just, like, this fan gets in his face, and Acid just pushes the guy into his chair.
Hell yeah.
Which I thought was awesome.
Yeah.
And then his opponent, a guy I didn't expect to see. I thought it was going to be Ruckus's like third match, and he enters to Ruckus's music. It's Juventud Guerrera, who did make it here on time.
Yeah,
and they were like, "Just fuck it. We paid the guy to be here. We're not even going to like make sense of it. He's just in the second round."
Yeah. And I was like, "Whoa, this guy's a big net." Like I misread it because I was like, "Whoa, he's really." I thought like he's Guerrero. But yeah, no, like I didn't know who this guy was. I didn't know, like, apparently, you know, I guess he's had a bit of a history.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to go into that right now with the side profile. Hoovy began wrestling for AAA in Mexico in 1992, a run highlighted by a feud with Rey Mysterio Jr. Those two would be career-long rivals. In 96, he was brought across the border by Paul Heyman for ECW with fellow luchadors Rey Mysterio, Conan, and Psicosis, La Parca. It wasn't a long stay, as later that year, WCW would sign him as part of their groundbreaking cruiserweight division. It is here he would lose his mask to Chris Jericho in a mask versus title match, forcing him to unmask forever. He would never go back under the mask. He was fired from WCW after a PCP-induced public incident at an airport and would work the indies alongside TNA until being signed by WWE in 2005. He would be part of the Mexicools, a racist faction which saw him super
That's
crazy.
So
and
sick. Yeah. The Mexicools.
Oh, yeah. You're not
the Mexicools, a racist faction.
Dude, yeah. They would come to the ring on tractors.
That's so sick.
Yeah, oh, this was WWE.
That was its worst. Peak, bro.
Yeah, this is right around the same time they brought in Crime Time.
Yeah,
which was
man.
Two black guys. Like,
I mean, I've seen some stuff from WWE in that era. I'm just like,
it's insane.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. Just
creatively
like
bankrupt.
Yeah, just a dude from Algeria being like, yeah, he's from Afghanistan. Like, just making things up and just being like, yeah, no one cares. Like, that's so funny. The Mexicools.
Yeah, he would be gone by 2006. This was not a long, lengthy run, unfortunately. Since then, Hoovy returned to Mexico, working for CMLL and AAA, as well as pop-up spots, more recently for AEW and TNA. Remember when MJF was putting Jericho through his trials and he brought back Juventud from his past?
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wild. Yeah.
He looks the exact same. He's one of these guys that just doesn't age.
Yeah, he looks good as well. He's, like, pretty jacked.
Yeah, right here. I mean, pretty much everyone in WCW and WWF was juicing at the time. But you could tell Hoovy was just juiced.
PCP, yeah, he was taking everything.
Yeah, he came out here on PCP.
Yeah, he didn't know what. That's why he was delayed at the airport. Yeah. He was like on PCP. He was like, oh man.
Yeah, I've done it again.
Oh shit, guys! Yeah. I need some help, please.
Hoovy comes out and the commentators seem shocked as they're lifting off his credentials. He grabs the mic and talking shit, saying he's here. And the fans are on his side. They are just losing it. These fans really are like star fuckers. Like, if they get any name, even though they act like above other companies, they're like, it's unbelievable. Like,
yeah,
it's Juventud Guerrero.
They'd love, yeah, they won't support their own. They'll just immediately be like, oh, hot new thing.
Yeah. So Hoovy starts fast, attacking Trent. While Trent attempts to slow down, doing his sort of bitch thing where he walks around the ring. Hoovy knocks him off and then hits a big plancha to the outside. Acid begs off and goes to leave the building, but then Hoovy just catches up to him and throws Acid into the sea of chairs, which the commentator actually calls the sea of chairs here. I can't remember if they've done that before. They must have.
I think so.
I invented that. But.
No, did you? You invented sea of chairs. Yeah.
In ring, Acid is begging off again, where Hoovy Irish whips him and then hits a big spin kick. And then he sets up. I forgot he was doing this spot at the time. It's so bizarre. He does the people's elbow, like the Rock's finisher.
Oh, yeah.
And just hits it clean.
Yeah.
It's just so weird. Zabar pulls Hoovy out by the leg, allowing the distraction for Acid, who Yakuza kicks him, and then distracts the referee as Zabar begins choking Hoovy. Hoovy kicks him in the corner, hits a high crossbody, then clotheslines Acid. He goes to the apron for a springboard leg drop and then follows with a spiking powerbomb to Acid, a really good-looking powerbomb here. Then Hoovy goes for the Hoovy driver, which is essentially the Michinoku driver. But Zabar pulls him outside again. So Hoovy pulls Bar in the ring and hits the Hoovy driver on Bar instead. This allows Acid enough time to catch Hoovy with a small package when the flash pin at 4 minutes and 14 seconds. So after all this anticipation, Hoovy gets rolled up in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
That is it for him tonight.
100%, that's double the time he was paid for. Yeah. I feel like he was only meant to be there a little bit and he like gave them a bit more. Like, I don't know. Like,
and he was for sure paid more than guys who probably do like 4 matches.
Yeah,
on
he'll get paid double what Ruckus was on or like triple what Ruckus was getting paid.
Yeah, well, that's the...
That show business, yeah. He should do PCP in an airport. Then he'll get paid that much.
So then we cut and we begin the semifinals with the Masked Winger, followed shortly by Minoru Fujita.
The Masked Winger, is that a new show? The Masked Winger.
That would be cool.
Yeah, that would. Yeah, who's the wrestler? Which celebrity is under that mask as a wrestler?
And at this point, these guys have legitimately had 2 matches each.
Yeah, they'd be fucked.
None of them have been like super long, but I imagine just like, yeah, your adrenaline coming back down, then having to go back out again.
You just had 12. Zandig's giving you 12 beers.
Yeah. Zandig is just fucking... Dude, just a motivational speech by Zandig. I'd be ready to run through walls.
Yeah, for sure.
So it starts fast with Vegeta immediately throwing Winger outside and hitting a big suicide dive. And then he just picks a chair up right next to him and hits him right in the head with it. They brawl towards the chain link fence and Winger reverse whips Vegeta into a wall, then hurls him into the sea of chairs. Back in the ring, we see an awesome reverse off, followed by a test of strength. Vegeta bridges Winger, and Winger jumps on him with his knees to try break the bridge, but he's monkey flipped off. The fans are appreciative of just giving the polite golf clap here. Vegeta locks in a half crab, and then it's like a Chris Jericho, sort of Walls of Jericho move, and he puts his boot on Winger's head, which was like disrespectful. Winger counter whips and drop kicks Vegeta outside and then hits a super safe pile driver. It was almost like he pussied out last second and like sort of sat down so he didn't want to hurt him.
Yeah. I think when you are tired though, like a good wrestler will be like, I can't pull off these moves at the same thing. Because you are, because like your adrenaline going up, but that is arguably like more exhausting to like be super pumped, drop down and then have to get back into it again instead of like a long thing.
Yeah, and I'm not criticizing someone for doing a safe pile driver.
I am boring nerd.
Vegeta gets Winger in the corner and chops him and then boot scrapes him, runs at him on the other side, but then he's dropped toe hold into the turnbuckle and Winger hits the neutralizer, which Cesaro would then use years later. I don't know what else to call it, but just for a two count. Vegeta gets a second wind. And I say second win, but the commentator's like, it must be his fourth or fifth win at this point.
Yeah.
Hits a DDT, a big German suplex, and a big splash for two. Winger counters that right after with a victory roll for two. The fans are just buying into all of these spots. Finally, Winger hits his big cannonball senton, which we've already seen him win two matches with, and it gets a two. And the fans are like shocked by it because they've already seen it win two matches, which I thought was just a great spot.
Good storytelling, good booking.
And then out of nowhere, Winger just ducks a clothesline and gets this Mahistral cradle for the win at 12 minutes and 31 seconds. I have written here it was a decent match, but you could sort of feel the crowd losing steam at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a few hours at this point.
We are 2.5 hours into the show at this point.
It's brutal. But yeah, good match, decent match. Like, insane that they're wrestling again. Like, and also the guy's got to wrestle again. So yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's crazy to have done that long of a match.
Yeah, the fans are respectful to Vegeta, and I do think we'll see him back soon.
For sure.
We get our cut, and then again, out comes Trent Acid. He's out next as the commentary reminds us that Trent beat the Briscoes and Eddie Valentine in the Briscoes' debut match. So they're saying Jay Briscoe is going to want his revenge for that. So Jay Briscoe comes out with Brother Mark by his side. And the fans are just like, these guys are fucking gods now.
Yeah.
Like, they give them just the hero's welcome.
Yeah, for sure.
After that last match they had. Opens with classic Trent stalling as the fans loudly chant, Trent sucks dick. A classic.
They brought it back. That is a classic. Yeah, I think, you know, that is an old school one. But yeah, no, I think it's tough to face a Briscoe, I think, after what they've just done. But
yeah, that would be just... Well, anyone following that match is just in a tough position. So yeah, we begin with chain wrestling. Jay gets to the ropes off a submission. Trent goes for a handshake, and then he does the classic, gives him the middle finger.
Yeah.
Which it's like, why would anyone accept a Trent Acid handshake at this point? Like,
I would, to be fair.
And they do another exchange of chain wrestling, which just ends with Trent Acid hitting his big Yakuza kick. He loves the Yakuza kick. Jay rolls outside, and then Trent pops to the top rope and just dives on him, which looked pretty decent. And then back in the ring, Trent hits a roaring elbow and a huge lariat for a two count. It's all Trent Acid here, which I really wasn't expecting. Considering I was pretty sure he was going to win this match, so usually they give the other guy the match, but Jay finally ducks and then hits a chop, hits a high drop kick, and then a Hurricane Rana, but then eats an elbow and just no sells it, and then hits a dragon screw and a leg lock, starting to work over Trent's legs here. Jay is flipped onto the apron and counters in with a flying clothesline into a dragon suplex with a bridge for two. The crowd is now getting into this one big time for sure. Jay hops to the top rope, but he's shoved to the floors from Trent Acid, and there's nothing for him to land on. He just wipes out on the floor.
Yeah, no mats, nothing.
Yeah, Trent makes a chair table, and Trent loves the chair table. I feel like every single match we're getting a chair table.
Yeah,
Trent.
I mean, why not?
He lays Jay onto it on the outside, gets to the top rope, and hits the bad trip 180 dive, just crushing Jay on these chairs. This looked fucking brutal. Then he throws Jay in the ring. He tells the fans to leave the chairs there, climbs to the apron, and Jay Briscoe just spears him off the apron, through the second rope, onto this chair table. It looked fucking wild.
Yeah, it looked crazy. I was very much into it. I mean, I think the storytelling angle from it really is like, Briscoe's had this insane match, but like Acid's still an older wrestler, right? He knows more about what he's doing. Mm-hmm. Like he's still a level above, I would say. Like it's like a young, you know, he is very young. He's still relatively young, but he's been in it, the game a lot longer than the Briscoes, I think. So yeah, it was good, I think, to have that at the start.
Yeah.
But then yeah, you know, Briscoe get a bit of that young buck energy.
Yeah, not the
young bucks, but I mean like a young like thingy to go a bit reckless and
yeah, the Briscoes are portrayed as very reckless. That was
that's it. Reckless youth, remember him?
Yeah, who's never done anything.
Yeah, yeah, remember
anything like this?
Yeah. So
yeah, where was he? You'd think he'd be.
Yeah,
in
you think? I no idea. Yeah,
he's probably wrestling in some other shitty like indie.
Yeah, do you remember that the tactic Apocalypse? It was like a dad and so like they bring them back.
You're taking me down memory.
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple of guys I want to check out where they're at, but
go back in the archives.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, no, I thought it was cool. There's some great moves here. Like definitely two amazing wrestlers, I'd say.
If I had seen this at the time, I've never seen that whole spin, that spear off the apron, or like through the ropes off the apron. This would have fucking blown my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really cool, but like, yeah, this is wild. So then Jay throws Acid in the ring. He attempts the cannonball that we've seen Winger use, but Trent just moves out of the way. So Jay gets placed on top. Trent kicks him in the face with another Yakuza kick, hits the Acid Bomb, and gets the clean win here at 11 minutes and 59 seconds. I have written here, this is a great match, just natural storytelling.
Yeah, for sure.
And the Briscoes are made men here.
Yeah. I think that's he had to win. Like, it couldn't be, the Briscoes couldn't, like, win again. But yeah, it was a great match, for sure. And, like, really, I'd say pushed. You know, it was like an anime thing, I guess, where you sort of like, in 5 years, maybe you'll be at my power level for Acid.
Well, and honestly, like, so Jay's, the first match with Mondo was 9 minutes. Then the second match with Briscoe was 15. And this one was like 12 minutes. So he's been in the ring the longest
by quite
a long time.
Yeah.
I don't think he could have had another one.
And probably
this.
Had three of the best matches.
Yeah. And took insane bumps and insane damage in all of them.
And his parents must be so proud.
Dude, they must have actually legitimately been so proud.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they couldn't show it because Gage and Hatred was behind them the entire show.
Yeah. So then we cut, and then the announcer breaks, like, this next six-man ultra-violent match, and the rules, or it's going to be two men to start, and then every 2 minutes another guy comes out, and the fans just begin booing this as soon as he starts explaining because they just know it's like convoluted bullshit.
Yeah, it is. It's a real shame. Like, it's a bit of a, it's another sort of like, I mean, I know that the wrestlers need a break, I guess, and think like, you know, it's a pause and a bit of a reset, but just make it a good match. Like, it is super convoluted, and it is super just like, why are they doing this now in a show that's been very clean, very lean, very like, let's just have some no bullshit wrestling to then just reintroduce the bullshit.
Yeah, for sure. Zandig just overthinks things. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, yeah.
Just let it be easy. So Justice Payne is out first alongside Justin Case. And then, of course, he grabs a microphone because it's Justice Payne.
He does look good, though.
Juice.
Oily. He looks oily and
oily
juicy.
And juice,
yeah,
for
big,
sure.
Big, juicy, oily boy.
And then, of course, he grabs a microphone and gives a rallying speech about how great ultra-violence is, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, no, he doesn't... A rallying speech, and he doesn't... It's not a rally about ultra-violence. It's a speech.
He gets the crowd into this.
Yes, yeah, not in... Yeah, no,
not in
yeah.
a racist way.
nothing to do with the Mexicals or whatever, nothing like
rock
that.
The Rock and
Rebel. Yeah, the Rock and Rebel. No, with the unnamed juice monster.
So then the tag champ... music hits the ring as Nick Gage appears because they're like, who's it gonna be? Is it gonna be Hatred or Gage? And I'm glad they chose Gage because Nate Hatred should not start a match like this. So we do get, it's gonna be Justice Payne, Wifebeater, and Lobo versus Nick Mondo, Nate Hatred, and Nick Gage. I thought it was gonna be Zandig, Hatred, and Gage, but I guess he just didn't want to wrestle tonight.
I mean, that's an insane lineup. I think it speaks to the quality of the other matches, though, that I was just like, I kind of want to get back to the tournament.
Yeah, totally. Well, so when this match starts, it's 2 hours and 40. So I'm just burnt out from wrestling.
Yeah,
at this point.
Yeah.
We get a frantic pace to start as Justice Payne overhead belly to belly's Gage. Gage comes back with two pile drivers and then a power bomb, like just overkill basically. He casually lifts up Justice Payne and power bombs him just over the top rope through a table that we don't even see set up there.
Yeah.
Like it's nothing.
Yeah.
I love when these two guys wrestle because they just are so like not safe with one another.
Yeah, if the Briscoes were going, like I said, the Briscoes were going for it, these guys just really go for it.
Mm-hmm. So this was also just a great way to start this match. Gage puts him back in the ring, hits a big roaring elbow, but then Justice Payne reverses and hits a powerbomb of his own, then does a running just kick to Nick Gage's balls, sets him in the corner, and hits an Alabama slam. So this, the music hits, and they say it's going to be every 2 minutes, but this was 3 minutes and 30 seconds. Nate Hatred rushes the ring, and the match just slows right down.
Yeah.
Cuts off Justice Payne. Justice Payne ducks a clothesline, hits a double clothesline of his own on both guys, then picks up Gage, DDTs him, and then hits a huge or gets eats a huge DDT from Nate Hatred. Then music hits 1 minute later as Lobo joins the fray. I just fucking hate how they can't just use an actual stopwatch. They've never once had the actual.
Just have a timer or something, like a big clock or something.
It's
yeah.
just irritating. So yeah, 1 minute later, Lobo joins and he cleans house with his belt on, which I thought was cool. Yeah. Iron Man title.
Yeah.
Then he does this crazy dive to both guys outside. Like every time Lobo does this suicide dive over the top rope, Undertaker style, I'm like, how does this guy get that sort of air? Cause like he's short and he looks so unathletic.
Yeah.
It's always impressive. He tosses Justice Payne a chair in the ring, who sets it up and then does a dive off it Sabu style to the outside. They pair off with Justice Payne and Gage brawling near the cage area and Lobo Hatred wrestling inside. Definitely the wrong choice. You should have had Gage and Justice Payne wrestling and Lobo and Hatred brawling.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Because it really like exposes Hatred and Lobo both as just poor wrestlers.
Yeah, they're not good wrestlers.
Yeah. Gage makes a chair table and just suplexes Justice Payne out on it on the outside. Then we hear Papa Roach once again cut my life into pieces as Mondo comes out and saves Nate Hatred. But Justice Payne, it's funny, it's like Justice Payne was just so eager to fuck up Nick Mondo, he just runs away from Nick Gage and hits the ring and attacks him immediately, yeah. Which is funny. But then Mondo gets the advantage and hits another assault driver on Justice Payne. Again, another really cool move. And then like 20 seconds later, Wifebeater just hits the ring. No even music anymore at this point. And he cleans house, and the fans are just clearly super into Wifebeater.
I mean, yeah, he is pretty sick.
We got to get a Wifebeater-Nick Mondo one-on-one match at some point.
Yeah, at some point, yeah, the two titans.
Yeah. So the match devolves into just three pairs brawling everywhere, and of course we've only got the one camera set up, so they can just follow like one at a time. Gage smokes Lobo from behind with a chair, and then brainbusters Justice Payne onto a seated chair. Then we turn, and Wifebeater is hurling Mondo into the sea of chairs. Gage dives into a pile of people on the outside while Mondo and Wifebeater are in the ring. Mondo is doing his dumb martial arts shit. So one thing I really don't like with Mondo, he'll do this like where he's like waving his hands in front of him and
yeah,
then gives like a throat thrust.
Like Mac from Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's very strange.
And it's cringy.
He's wearing like karate pants as well and shit like that.
Mm-hmm. Gage saves and hits a big boot scrape onto Wifebeater, sorry. Justice Payne then hits the Pain Thriller onto Gage as Mondo hits Lobo with a chair. Wifebeater attacks and holds Mondo for a side slam on the apron. And Lobo just comes at, like, so he's holding Mondo like a bag of groceries under his right arm. And Lobo comes off the top rope as Wifebeater dives off the apron and they put Mondo through a table, which is the second just brutal table bump Mondo's taken in this night, which is wild. And then in the ring, Wifebeater hits the Chokenstein, followed by the Justice Payne moonsault, and then a Lobo leg drop on a Nick Gage for the babyface win here at 14 minutes and 46 seconds.
Yeah.
Just too long this late into the show. And
yeah, definitely.
The problem is with this ultra-violent stuff, they've already set the bar so high with actual, like, insane violence. Like, we've seen glass, we've seen fire. So when it is just chairs and tables and stuff, it really is, like, lacking something.
Not even a light tube.
Yeah. Well, because they can't. They're just in the arena where they're not allowed. And it just really feels like, I don't know, underwhelming.
Yeah, especially when, like, the wrestling isn't... Like, it was a fine match, but, like, to not have all the extra stuff that makes it, you know, the ultra-violent sort of CZW special after having, like, legitimately great wrestling, you just sort of, like, this feels a bit mid.
My favorite part was the first 3 minutes 30 where it was just Gage and Justice Payne.
Mm.
Maybe we should have just done that singles match. But it feels like one of those shows where Zandig wants to get everyone on.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's a big deal for him. You know, we'll let him have his day.
Yeah. So everyone leaves other than Gage and Hatred, who remain in the ring with the Do. And Gage gets on the mic and yells, "This is bullshit, but we're still the champs." And then he throws down the mic as the crowds chant Briscoes, and they sort of act pissed off. So this was a sort of nice setup, because they clearly are building to the Briscoes versus Gage and Hatred.
Yeah, to become the tag team champions, right?
Mm-hmm. We come back with the trophy in the ring as the chase hits, and out comes Trent Acid and Zabar.
He's got, like, Zandig written on his arms as well, on his, like, arm thingies, which is pretty funny.
And, like, Acid is limping, and I couldn't tell if he was, like, just selling because he's been in, like, three matches already, or if he was legitimately fucked up from that.
Bit of both. I think a bit of both. I think, mate, you know, and obviously Acid's thing is, like, you playing possum. So he's like, oh, trying to get him into, like, oh, he's weak or whatever.
And then Winger comes out again with a new mask and then a shirt on for some reason. And we get Winger versus Trent Acid as Trent is yelling "shut up" to start the match to the crowd. And Winger just yells nothing in Japanese for cheers from the fans. Trent Acid does a legit handshake, but then attacks as Winger turns his back heading to the corner. But again, why would you turn your back on a guy like in the ring? It just babyface. I hate when they make babyfaces look fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Winger comes back with two Hurricane Ranas, then a big drop kick, sends Trent outside, then he looks like he's going to dive on Trent, and he goes to the other side and just sentons onto Zabar instead, which was cool. But this also leaves an opening for Trent to just hit a moonsault onto Winger. Back in the ring, Acid makes a chair table, of course, but Winger hangs him up, then goes for a bulldog, but Trent rock bottoms him through the chair table, which looked pretty brutal. Winger then does an alley-oop powerbomb, where it's like, you know when they set him up for a powerbomb, and instead he throws him, like, over his head. And Trent, and he does this onto a seated chair onto Trent, and then Trent lays on the chair as he dropkicks it. Then he aims a missile dropkick for Trent, but accidentally hits the referee instead. And then Winger hits a cradle breaker, and the commentators are like, wait a second, I've seen that move before. And Winger takes off his mask to reveal it's not Winger at all, it's Johnny Cashmere. I like this.
Yeah, it was very. It was a crazy reveal. Like, I mean, I guess because we're watching them squash together, it doesn't feel like. Because I'm like, didn't we just watch him like last week? But I guess it's been like months or whatever since we've seen him. Because everyone's like, oh my god!
Oh right, wasn't he fired on the last show?
Yeah, something like that. The stipulation was you have to leave or whatever on the last show. So they're like, oh my god, I can't. But it's like, yeah. I mean, I guess, but maybe it's been a little bit longer. But for me, I was just like, oh, cool. From last week, there's Johnny Cashmere again.
Yeah, so Zabar and Cashmere just begin brawling to the back, like, corner offices area, sort of out of sight. And then the real Winger appears and just starts beating the shit out of Trent. So, like, the one thing I didn't like about this is that the heel is just getting totally fucked over here by, like, two baby faces.
Yeah, the ref's fine with it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's cool.
He's like, oh, this is the Winger. Okay.
Yeah, that was actually an extra stipulation. Johnny Cashmere enters as a Winger to begin with.
Oh, no, to be fair, he did missile dropkick. He accidentally missile dropkicked the referee, so he wouldn't have seen, like, the switch.
Oh, yeah, true.
Other than
true.
The fact that they're wearing two different masks and...
And then he just doesn't believe him. He's just like, no, I think you're making that up.
And it's weird. So one camera follows outside with Cashmere and Zabar. But like, you can't see them on camera. You're watching in the ring, but you can hear the audio from outside.
Yeah.
And then eventually they just decide to cut it. So yeah. I assume Bar and Cashmere just like were brawling outside.
Yeah, no one watching. Yeah, no, for no, yeah. Just for reals, though. Just for the love of the game.
Yeah. And then in-ring, Winger hits a big missile dropkick, but then misses his big cannonball senton. Acid, of course, constructs the chair table. He knows he needs it to win this. Puts Winger on it, but then misses the bad trip and just wipes out onto a chair table. Looked fucking brutal. Like,
yeah.
He must have like been injured at the end of the show.
Oh, yeah.
He takes so many big bumps, which isn't like very common for Acid. So Winger hits a springboard 180 splash. Then he sets a table up outside, and the production team just sets up another table next to it. Which I always think it's funny when production's just like, we'll help you. We'll set up weaponry and shit. He lays Acid on top of them and then climbs up to the crow's nest where we saw Ruckus earlier. Goes to the top rung of it, so he's just like as high up as he can be, and then nails a cannonball onto it. Only breaking one of the tables, but just nailing Acid. Like, this looked fucking brutal. Like, he just squashed him. Winger chucks Acid into the ring and gets a two count. The fans are fucking losing it at this pinfall. They are fully into this match at this point.
Yeah, it's great.
Trent hits a sunset powerbomb, then triggers another pinfall, and finally Winger rolls through a reverse cradle and gets a flash pin at 11 minutes and 34 seconds. That is including the Kashmir portion of this match as well. So of all people, I don't know if you had a prediction when you first saw this. I did not think Winger would be walking away with this.
I didn't think Winger would win. I thought it would be acid overall.
Me too.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, it's, that's cool that it can be surprising because, yeah, I genuinely thought it was going to be acid, but I think it makes sense to have the bullshit stuff then so Acid can be like, well, I was fucked about by Kashmir or whatever, and like, yeah, they can get
It almost doesn't, because if you remember last week, when last show or whenever it was, when Kashmir lost to Acid, they showed like a respect angle and teased that they were going to get like back together, and then Zandig fires Kashmir. But it's almost like, why would Kashmir then, you'd think he would want to attack Zandig and not like fuck over Trent.
He's
Acid.
Going for Zandig's boy, he's going for Zandig's proxy.
And he's also just like, you know, like I made the point already, but this is Acid's fourth match and he's getting fucked over. It sort of did feel like...
Or maybe this makes him turn on Zandig and like say, oh, Kashmir, you were right, actually, or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
There could be some storytelling there. But yeah, no, he was good to... or he was actually injured. Maybe he was actually injured. Mm. I don't know.
So Winger is announced as the winner. You can see he's clearly exhausted. Like, he's just laying down on the mat like next to his trophy.
Yeah, yeah.
And Zandig comes out. And he's on the apron with a microphone. He's like, man, can CZW fucking wrestle or what? He's putting over his own company. Then all participants come out to the ring in their orange best of the best shirts as Zandig leads the CZW chant. Trent gets on the microphone and says, I didn't get it done. But he puts over Winger and asks for a handshake. And then, like, I almost expect him to, like, kick Winger in the balls or something.
Yeah, I thought he was going to grab the trophy and hit him over the head or whatever.
Yeah, oh, yeah. At this point, I'm like, this is where it happens.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't. They hug, and as they're hugging, Zandig says, everyone, CZ fucking throw you.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was nice. I thought that was a nice end. I thought that was a good way to end it.
Yeah. He presents Winger with the trophy. All talent enter. They lift Winger above their head. Zandig asks...
Yeah, it's like the freeze frame, end of the credits roll in the end of the 1980s film. Like Teen Wolf or something.
Zandig asks the crowd who they thought did the best, and then the fans, of course, just erupt into a chant of Briscoes.
Oh, yeah, because they are doing like a ballot thing or whatever, right? There's like a ballot going on where it's like, vote for your favorite wrestler.
When Zandig's like, which one? And the crowd start chanting both these guys, which I thought was fucking awesome. So then Zandig brings out two smaller trophies, which is hilarious, and just gives them to both of the Briscoes. It was a genuine emotional moment here on a CZW show.
Yeah, it was nice. It was, you know, dad helping, you know, celebrating his kids.
Zandig says, we're doing this again next year. CZW has the best wrestlers ever. The music plays as the wrestlers all mingle. And then we get a post show with House and Gargiulo thanking CZW for the greatest night in the history of the company. And as we go into our final assessment, I will agree that was the greatest night in the history of CZW.
They've said it many, many times at this point. But no, this legitimately probably is. Yeah, like I think not just the quality of it, which was very high, but I just think overall the importance of it, I think you could probably feel that, that it went through and there was a bit of bullshit, but overall, like, you know, it was just a straight up wrestling show. And like, I really like that.
I'm going to do something historic here with my rating.
I'm going to do the same thing.
I'm giving it a passing grade of 3.5 out of 7.
3.5, yeah. I'm going 3.
Okay, no.
Yeah, that's still really good. Like 3, you're getting there. I think there's still some stuff you could clean up. You know, some of the technical issues, and there's still like
the production's still dog shit.
Yeah, and like some of the matches, I get, you know, to give the other wrestlers a rest. Like, where they could have been better, I think. But overall, like that's their small issues in overall a legitimately good show.
Yeah, I just couldn't give this show a failing grade based on how much I enjoyed some of the matches.
Yeah,
I legitimately thought one of the Briscoes matches one of the best matches I've seen in ages. There was some bad booking, but it was a lot of good booking as well. A lot of good storytelling.
I think to have a 3.5 hour show and for us not to be like, we want to jump off a cliff is incredible. Like, is insane.
And Zandig really made this whole thing feel important. And considering it came out of nowhere, it was just like, a random tournament for a random trophy. I just thought they just pulled it off here. I just really was impressed by this show.
Yeah, and it probably was important to be fair. Like, I could feel like, I could imagine this was a hail, like, there's probably a lot of money spent on it. Like, if Guerrero's just come out of
WCW.
Yeah, there's probably like cost a lot even just to get him for 4 minutes.
Multiple guys in from Japan as
well. Flying them in, like having, you know, wife beat all their own big stars, Rick Blade. I mean, it's Rick Blade got knocked out right away, right? And it was like still very good. So, but yeah, like definitely the...
No Jimmy Washington.
No cavalcade of stars
nothing,
or whatever.
Nothing egregiously offensive.
Yeah, no, that was, yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, it's definitely exciting for the future because it's not just these guys from Japan or whatever, but there's like Briscoe, like legitimate CZW talent.
Yeah, we're going to see more Red, I imagine. We're going to see probably more Wenger and more Fujita as well. So
yeah.
They really have built like this junior division into something worth watching. So yeah, I don't know. It was great.
I was excited.
In the history of CZW.
The
so
great,
far.
Yeah. 100%.
Well, anyways, everyone, this has probably gone pretty long. I am curious. But thank you very much for listening. I've been Jordan Ducharme, at FunnyJordanD on Instagram and on Twitter.
I'm Ben Stead. I'm at PinkHoverboard on Instagram.
And we thank you very much for listening. Keep it tuned to the Wrestling Brain. Tell all your friends, and we'll see you again next week.
Goodbye.